Hello, I'm Rebecca Robinson, your host for the More to Life podcast in West Kelowna. Stories of people's lives have always fascinated me, and I believe they're one of the best gifts we can give. Our testimonies on how God delivers us through challenges or dark places inevitably gives hope and can help others see a light at the end of their tunnel. Join me as I interview varied guests who bravely tell their stories for us to be encouraged by. Welcome back to the More to Life podcast from Emmanuel Church. I'm Rebecca, and today I get to interview Taylor Lefebvre. And she has been at Emmanuel Church for how long?
Since probably like late 2016, early 2017, okay. Somewhere around that range.
Yeah, and most people will recognize her. She's a regular volunteer, long time now in the youth group and in other things.
Or... I do the coffee bar as well.
The coffee bar, okay.
And then once upon a time, I did children's ministry in like Sunday school, which is funny because some of my Sunday school kids ended up being my youth kids.
Oh, wow. So long time. Yeah. You get to see them through the whole process.
Yep.
Well, I'm so glad you could come and join us today. And we're going to be jumping right in with your really a tough, tough time right away in your life was your childhood.
Yeah.
So can you maybe paint a picture of some events that stand out or what life was like for you growing up?
So before I dive into that, I was raised by my grandparents.
Okay.
But before they took me in, I lived with my mom and my stepdad, and it was not a good environment by any means. My mom and stepdad were both heavily into drugs, alcohol, partying, you name it. They were into it. But it was just not a great environment. A lot of dark heaviness that was involved.
And you could feel that as a child?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have memories of, like...
I have a...
How was your day living in that kind of situation and school life or...
School, which you can't... You don't meet many people that can say they've almost failed grade one.
Oh, yeah.
And it wasn't the fact that I'm not smart. It's by the fact that my mom just didn't take me.
Hmm.
I would go maybe Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Okay.
And if I did go, I was late.
Oh.
Like, if I were to bother, my mom would bother to drop me off, it'd be like 10:30, 11 o'clock, almost halfway through the school day.
Mm-hmm.
And then she'd be late picking me up.
Aw, so you were standing outside?
I'd be standing outside, or she'd drop me off. And of course, elementary school, the doors lock right away, right? So no one can get in the building. Mm-hmm. So I'd have to race around to the office, and they'd go, "Good morning, Taylor," without even having to look up, because it'd be me walking into the office.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
And so how long was that situation for you?
I lived with my mom until I was 6.
Oh, okay, so grade 1.
Yeah, so I was halfway through grade 1. It was spring break, and my mom had sent me to be with my dad for a little bit. My dad lived in Whistler at the time.
Okay.
And then my mom drove up to Whistler to pick me up, and then on the way home, she dropped me off. We stopped at Grandma and Grandpa's, and I was very confused. It's like, why are we at Grandma and Grandpa's? Don't get me wrong. Even then, I adored my grandparents. I was with them most weekends. But I get dropped off, and I'm tired. We've been on the road for 5-6 hours. Like, I want to go home. And I look at my mom and go, "Mom, can we go home now?" And this is like one of the, you know, you have certain memories that are just grained into your brain. No matter how long time will go by, you will remember this moment.
Yeah.
I will never forget the look on my mom's face as she told me, "Taylor, you are home."
Oh. Wow.
And I looked at my mom, I looked at my grandma, and I was so confused. And so, like, my grandma and grandpa both had to, like, peel me off of my mom.
And so my there mom, was no discussion or preparation?
No discussion, no nothing. I was totally in the dark. I had no idea any of the ministry was involved, and I knew nothing.
Okay, so that's what precipitated it then.
Yeah, someone had contacted the ministry. To this day, I'm actually sure, no one knows who contacted the ministry.
Really? Mm.
Like, I don't know if it was the school who did. I don't know if it was a family friend. I don't know if they were tipped off. I have no idea.
Yeah.
And I was only supposed to be there for 2 weeks at my grandparents.
Wow.
I was only supposed to be there for 2 weeks. And it ended up being from the age of 6 until I moved out at 20.
Really?
Yeah.
That's incredible.
And to quote my mom at the time, because I asked my mom later on, I was like, "Why not fight for me? Like, why not come back? I was only supposed to be there for 2 weeks."
Yeah.
And she looked at me and just said, "Why bother? I knew you were safe. So why bother trying?"
Is that really the answer you wanted at that time?
I think I was like 15 when she gave me. No, not even 15. I would have been younger than that.
Did you understand that?
I've been told from a young age that I have an old soul. So at the age of like, say, 6, mentally, I probably was closer to 12 in some ways.
Okay.
Right. So like I was used to having more mature conversations than I was hanging out with my peers.
You had to grow up fast.
I had to grow up very fast.
Yeah.
So it made it very hard to make friends.
Yeah.
Because what do you mean your mom and dad tuck you in at night? Mm-hmm. Your mom doesn't like just say goodnight and walk out.
Yeah.
And then have a bunch of people come over and party till 2 a.m.
Right,
what do you
mean? I can't relate to too many people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So my husband likes to crack the joke that I come from two worlds, because I come from the world that's dark and there's the drugs, the alcohol, the partying. But then once my grandparents took over, I moved into a very stable, loving, caring environment.
Mm-hmm.
But I still had access to those horrible worlds, because my mom didn't just drop off the face of the earth.
Right.
Mm-hmm. She still picked me up from school on a Friday afternoon. We'd hang out for a few hours.
Oh, okay.
She had to earn that. That took a couple of years to get. But like,
wow.
Yeah, I used to have to do visitations at the ministry. And yeah, it was a whole thing.
And so you really didn't know why you were taken.
No, I didn't fully understand it until later. Until basically I had to bluntly ask, why am I not living with mom?
Yeah. Because that was your normal.
That was my normal.
Yeah.
And my grandma had to sit me down and say, well, do you think it's normal having big fights in your house? Do you do grandpa and I fight? And I go, no. Okay. Is it normal that mom would miss your Christmas concert? Well, yeah, that's normal.
Mm-hmm.
But should it be normal?
Mm-hmm.
And it took me a bit to fully understand, because my grandparents have never missed a thing. They were at every soccer game, every school play, even if I wasn't acting in the school play, they came to watch it because they knew I worked on it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, nice. They came to everything.
Wow.
So when my mom would deign to show up to a soccer game, I would turn myself inside out, because mom showed up to watch me play.
Mm-hmm. So it still had such significance for you that she was making
I'm a mommy's girl.
Yeah.
I love, my mom now, I will make this very clear. My mom has now been clean for 15 years.
Wow.
My mom is doing extremely well. My mom is now actually one of my best friends.
That's fantastic.
But my mom will never be my mom.
Yeah.
My grandma is my mom.
Mm.
When I am sick, I don't want my mom. I want my grandma.
Yeah.
When I had appendix surgery at 10, I wanted my grandma when I woke up from surgery.
Right.
It was first thing I asked for. Where's my grandma?
Yeah. Mm.
So as much as I love my mom, my grandma is my mom.
Well, it's a beautiful thing that you have this kind of
feeling
though towards your mom still, because so many people, when they have been taken from homes and have things said to them like that, why would I bother? I mean, that can set you up for some pretty awful resentment.
I've been asked that lots, how are you not angry?
Yeah.
And I would just say that it's not really my place to be angry with her in that way.
Or that it's supernatural.
I have I have gone through lots of different counseling, and I've done lots of different group therapies as a kid. The ministry makes sure that a lot, I don't know if the ministry, but my grandma, she fought for a lot of these resources for me.
Yeah.
So I would at school, I'd be taken out of a afternoon to go to a program where there's other kids from similar situations, where we'd all sit down and do a group therapy session, and we would talk about feelings, and we all discovered very early on we have a very dark sense of humor. Because there's just certain jokes that only a kid who has gone through trauma that I've gone through will laugh at.
Yeah.
Because to them, it's funny. To me, it's funny. To other people, it's are you okay?
So that must have been cathartic then, to be around other kids that finally you could have some relating
but
to.
But of course, none of us went to the same school.
Oh.
We all were all over the place.
And no cell phones to stay connected
to. No cell phones, because we were 10 years old.
Yeah.
before kids were given cell phones.
Right.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of therapy, a lot of talking it out.
When do you feel that forgiveness for your mom and stepdad happened?
I was definitely almost 18.
Hmm.
I was 18 because my mom, she made a lot of bad choices. I lost contact with my mom from ages, basically after I had an appendix surgery when I was 10.
Okay.
So around that time, my mom and stepdad divorced.
Okay.
And it sent my mom spiraling.
Oh.
I found this out actually only a few years ago, Because my stepdad and I were pretty tight. Like, he was cleaning himself up. Mm-hmm. I was calling him dad. We were building a really good relationship. And it was my stepdad who looked at my mom and just said, Tracy, like, I can't do this anymore. I don't want this life. I want to work and actually keep a job. I want to buy a home. Like, he wanted to grow up. So when they split up, my mom, and because he wanted to keep in contact. Mm-hmm. I found that out years later. He wanted to keep seeing me. Hmm. And it was my mom who basically was like, don't you ever go near my kid. Wow. Right? So I didn't find that out until years later, because here I was building this resentment going, you spent so much time with me just to walk away like that. Like, yeah.
That's a double whammy.
Yeah. And like, I'll admit, I still struggle with abandonment issues to this day.
Of course. Yeah.
Right? Hmm. So.
How old were you when they split up?
I was 10.
Okay.
They're back together now, which is fantastic.
Oh.
Yeah, they got back together. Yeah, they were apart for like 6 years. Uh-huh. So during those years apart, my mom spiraled, made some really bad choices, and ended up in prison.
Gosh. Wow.
My mom found rock bottom. Mm-hmm. She refers to her time in prison as Camp Cupcake, because all the girls who enter are usually stick thin. Uh-huh. And by the time they leave, they have muffin tops and they're all pudgy looking like cupcakes.
That's a funny name for it. I've never heard that.
So she refers to it as Camp Cupcake. And it's, you know, exactly. It makes you chuckle, because it was minimum security. Okay. She wanted me to come visit. She'd write me letters. Mm-hmm. And I was 16. I was angry.
Yeah.
I wanted nothing to do with her. I wish I could say I leaned into God at that point in time. No, I didn't. I held on to that resentment and I wanted nothing to do with her.
Yeah.
And my grandparents were like, that's your right. If you don't want to go see your mom in jail, you don't have to go see your mom in jail. Mm-hmm. If you don't want to contact your mom, you don't have to contact your mom. If you mm-hmm. want to burn the letters she sends you, burn the letters.
Wow. Yeah.
So.
What would you say was a spiritual influence in your life growing up? Like, did you have believing parents? It was just your grandparents?
My grandparents, my Auntie Christy and my Uncle Patrick, their family. And my great grandma in Vancouver, my grandma Poole.
And so they were all Christians for
all Christians.
Many years. Would you have considered yourself one as a kid?
Like, it took me a while. I prayed, like, I prayed with grandma before, like, we'd go to bed, like, typical, like, you'd sing a prayer at dinner time. And so the influence of God was always around from the time my grandparents took me in. It was mm-hmm. a thing. Mm-hmm. We practiced the Lord's Prayer. We would sing, we'd always pray before we eat. We'd pray before bed. Like, it just became a routine. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I think I was in grade 8 when somebody was just asking me, like, do you believe in evolution or creation, without even thinking it was a creation. I was like, oh, okay, guess that's somewhere I stand. Like, didn't even think about it, because that was just where I grew up.
Yeah.
But I also, my grandparents never pushed it. Mm-hmm. They wanted me to come into it on my own.
Okay.
But it was understood that if the family was going to church on a Sunday, I was to go to church on a Sunday. There was no like, oh, I'm having a sleepover at so-and-so's house. We'll come home in the evening. It was, no, we're picking you up for church in the morning. Please be ready.
Yeah, that's the expectation now.
Yeah. So.
And was that okay with you in your teens?
Funny enough, during my teens was actually the time I wish we would have gone to church, but my grandparents couldn't find a pastor they thoroughly enjoyed at the time.
Okay.
The church we attended for years broke up, essentially. Apparently there was a lot of drama behind the scenes that I was too young to know.
Yeah.
So we floated. We floated to different churches, and we could never just seem to find the church home.
Yeah.
And we finally found it here in Emmanuel, but at that point I was a young adult, and mm-hmm. I was making the choice to come to church on a Sunday.
Okay. So what was it like after you moved out? When did you move out?
I was 20. I did things a little backwards. I'll admit, like, this was having the world influence. Like I said, I grew up having Christian parents, but also having worldly parents.
Yeah.
So I moved out at 20, and I moved in with my husband, moved in with Brody, because we were spending all our time together anyways, and we couldn't afford two rents. Mm-hmm. Basically, it was out of near survival.
Yeah.
And after we were together for like 4 years, bought our condo that we currently live in, and then we got engaged, and now we're married. And now we have Oliver.
Slightly backwards, and then righted itself.
Right. I remember I sat down with, like, Pastor Ben McGilvery. Him and I had coffee one day, and I was just talking, because he referred to Brody as my husband, and I gave him a look. And he goes, do you plan on being with anybody else ever? And I go, no. He goes, God doesn't care about paperwork. And I was like, okay then. So it just kind of, like, the way that hit me, I was like, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. I still definitely believe, like, especially, like, working with youth kids, I'm like, please don't move in with someone until you're married. Like, just opens a whole other can of worms.
It really does, yeah. I think there's something to be said for the paperwork. It just kind of seals a commitment, but yeah.
In some ways, because of how Brody and I came together, in a sense, in his words, what he has told me, he's like, if I hadn't been with you, I wouldn't have the relationship I do with Jesus. Mm-hmm. And he says, if I would have had the relationship I have now, we would have waited to live together.
Right, right.
He's like, I don't regret it by any means, because we've been together, oh geez, we're going on 8 years.
Oh, yeah.
We're going on 8 years of being together. Hmm. And I always have to crack the joke that I like to take credit for those first four, because I'm like, I know we've been married for 3 years, 4 years, 3 years, 3 years.
Okay.
There we go. Keeping track. We've been married for 3 years in May, but I'm like, no, I earned that ring. I like to crack the joke that I earned my ring, because he made me hike up a hill that was like, by hill, I mean side of a mountain.
Okay.
It was like climbing rock shale.
Yeah.
And like having to hike to this like beautiful spot in Headley, like old mine. It was gorgeous. Don't get me wrong. I don't like hiking though.
This is what he made you do.
Yes. So I earned that engagement ring from that hike.
Oh, that's good. And can you tell me about the rest of your family, like your siblings? What was their situation?
So I had a half brother.
Okay.
His name was Brandon, and he was 3 years older than I am. Hmm. And it's hard to describe our relationship because we weren't raised together.
Okay.
So he lived with his mom for the first like 12 years of his life, mm-hmm. and then he decided he was going to live with our dad.
Okay.
And I don't have the greatest relationship with my dad. I love my dad, but he's not my dad, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
My dad moved up here when I was 14. Yeah, I was 14 when dad moved my brother up here. He had just graduated high school. I kind of feel bad for him in this situation. Just graduated high school, and it was either A, you can find a place to live in the Lower Mainland by yourself, or you're moving to the Okanagan with me. So my brother moved up here.
Yeah.
No friends.
Yeah.
And away from home.
Yeah.
Essentially. But no, my brother and I were friends, I'd say. Like, we were pretty decent friends. Like, we would go get sushi together every now and then, and he loved to play video games, and I like to watch people play video games, so it worked out well.
What's the age difference?
3 years.
Okay.
So, yeah. So he would have been 30 this year. Hmm. He would have turned 30 back in October.
And so what happened?
My brother, unfortunately, got hooked on drugs, and back in, like, I think, like, 2022, he got hooked on drugs and took a really weird route. My dad kicked him out. None of us really talked to him for a while. It was get yourself together, otherwise we want nothing to do with you type thing. He got clean, moved back in with my dad, and then he relapsed. And then during that relapse, unfortunately, there was fentanyl in it.
Yeah.
And it killed him. So,
I'm so sorry.
Yeah. So in 2023, we lost my brother.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's such a sudden, tragic. I lost a brother too to fentanyl-laced drugs that he was on, and you kind of think when they're living that life that you're going to get that phone call that it's happened, and you can't prepare for that.
What I can keep hearing in my head from my dad was like, I was expecting this when he first started it, when he was starting the drugs, I was expecting this phone call, not now that he's clean.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting it now that he's clean.
Right, exactly.
And that was basically what my dad just kept repeating and repeating. And I'm so grateful that Brody was there that day, because we basically raced right over to the house, and we had some really good family friends there helping out my dad. But it was, yeah, happy birthday to me, because that was the day before my birthday.
Yeah, oh so, gosh.
Yeah, that's I was dreadful. Also 26 weeks pregnant at the time.
Wow. Your most emotional state.
Yeah, so to deal with it. I purposely, it was only recently that I actually started to process that he's gone. Because during my pregnancy, I basically shoved it down.
Yeah.
I was like, I can't feel this, because I know at this point in time, my child can feel everything I'm feeling. Mm-hmm. And that's not healthy for the baby. Mm-hmm. So, and I got very angry. Mm-hmm. I got angry at the choices he had made. Because it was his choice that my son no longer has an uncle on my side. Mm-hmm. It was his choice that I'm now an only child. Mm-hmm. And it was his choice that left our dad completely broken. And it's like taking him home. It's been a year and a half and my dad is still very, very distraught.
Yeah.
Because of something, a stupid choice he made.
Yeah.
So.
And is that anger something you're still dealing with right now?
Not as much anymore. That was what was keeping the emotions locked down. Like, in the sense of just being angry with him. And it was during a prayer retreat we were having for the youth kids here. And we were all sitting in silence and everyone was praying, doing their own thing. And I had a moment where basically I just heard, it's okay. Mm-hmm. You can grieve. It's okay. And the floodgates opened. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting next to a couple of my youth kids and they're looking at me like, aww, what is happening?
Yeah.
What, so I'm doing everything I can to like lock it up because I'm like, this isn't a moment that I need to be like absolutely sobbing uncontrollably in the middle of the gathering room.
Oh, goodness.
Caleb and I lock eyes and he's just looking at me funny and I'm just like, hat down, don't look at anyone. Yeah, and then afterwards everyone kind of did their own thing and then I had a friend of mine pray with me and we kind of had a moment and yeah.
So you feel released from it?
I felt a lot of release from it. I still have touches of anger, but mm-hmm. nothing compared to how I was.
Yeah.
I'm more angry at the idiot move that he made.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I'm sad by the fact that he's gone. I can't call him up, but hey, I want to get sushi. You want to come? I can't do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sad that he'll never get to meet the goofball that is his nephew.
Mm-hmm.
Like, mm-hmm. my son is such a little light.
Yeah.
He is such a joy. He is so funny. Such a goof. Yeah. He's 15 months old and he makes me laugh every day. Like, every day.
They do that.
And
that's awesome.
I know my brother would have made a fantastic uncle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he's looking down. He's uncle in heaven.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Would you say there was a point where, you know, after your upbringing and you're kind of like, I'm a church girl, I go to church on Sundays as a teen. And then was there a point where you're like, no, I'm really in this now. I've dedicated my life. And you had a baptism recently, so maybe you can tell me what led you to that.
The funny part is our baptism, we've been trying to make that work for 3 years.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't a sudden decision.
It wasn't a sudden decision. It's been about 3 years in the making. We were trying to get baptized. Oh, I was trying to get baptized. And then my husband and I were like, oh, maybe we'll get baptized together the morning of our wedding. And then didn't work out.
Wow, what an idea, though.
It would have been fantastic, mm-hmm. except, you know, it's May. And we were watching, the day we got married, there was, like, multiple storms around us.
Okay.
And God literally was like, no, it can rain everywhere but right here because we had an outdoor wedding.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Risky.
Yeah, right? Risky on the May long weekend. Like, we were not thinking when we planned our wedding. So we were, we'll get baptized then. Okay, we'll get baptized this summer. Well, Caleb wanted to be the one to baptize us. He's like, I'm out of town, but they're doing the baptisms. And it was really important to me to get baptized in the lake.
Yeah.
I didn't want it in a pool in the auditorium. I wanted it in the lake.
Yeah.
And so Caleb's like, I'm in town this year. You're getting baptized. And it was really funny because no one had actually approached us about if we wanted to get baptized. It was just kind of like, we discussed it during staff meeting.
Okay.
And do you want this to happen? And we were like, yeah, we do. And we just kind of looked at each other. We're like, yep. We just decided like on the spot, like on a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah.
Because we were at that point with our journey with God that we're like, oh, I guess we haven't had, like, we really should do this step.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we got it done. I think the hardest part was writing up the testimonies because again, Caleb was out of town prior to that moment. So Caleb would be the one to record our little video to like put in front of the congregation.
Yeah.
No, we had to do it live.
Yeah.
So that just made it like, oh, okay.
Oh.
But no, it was a beautiful moment. Being baptized by one of our best friends made it even more special.
Wonderful experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was a beautiful day out. All of our friends and a lot of our family came out, which was kind of cool. So
was your mom there or?
No, my mom now lives in Northern Alberta.
Oh, okay.
My mom's been up that way 12 years, and she does her best when she lives out there because she doesn't really know anyone. It sounds funny, but my mom's become the lady who used to be the party central in all the bars and the clubs, and now she lives on a little hobby farm.
Oh, really?
Yeah, my mom has chickens. She's got 3 dogs, 4 cats, a bunch of
those
fish.
Those are her people.
Those are, like, and she owns her own cleaning company.
Oh,
like,
cool.
She's doing very well for herself. And her and my stepdad live on this little, like, 2-acre farm. They rent out just outside of Grand Prairie. Like, they're doing very well.
And so you said they both got clean, but how is their spiritual walk? Are they Christians?
My stepdad is starting to teeter the walk. My mom is very along the lines, if there's a God out there, then how come all this has happened?
Mm-hmm.
And my response to her is, I'm like, no, God didn't let it happen. You made the choices that led to down that road.
Mm-hmm.
If you would have just stopped and listened, you could have heard a little voice telling you to go, no, other way,
mm-hmm.
other way, Tracy,
mm-hmm.
other way.
Mm-hmm.
So
Yeah.
Because I've even been asked, how can I not be angry with God when all these things have happened to me? And my response is, it's not God who did it. It's the people and their choices.
Yep. Exactly.
So
to kind of sum up, if there is somebody, you know, a teen or someone that kind of listens to the story later on the recording, is there some encouragement or something that you could say to when you were in one of your toughest spots? What would you want them to understand?
You're never truly alone. I know being a teenager, you feel like it's you against the world, but it's not. God is alongside with you, even if you try to find an adult that you're close to, a young adult. I recommend an adult, not necessarily a friend. Mm-hmm. I recommend an adult that you feel safe talking to. Mm-hmm. Because in high school, I had a teacher who became a very, very close and dear confidant, who was the only reason I made it through my high school experience. Mm-hmm. And this teacher, I still am in touch with to this day.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. Every so often, we kind of do a quick check-in.
But yeah, That's awesome.
So that's my advice, is just remembering that you're never truly alone. I wish I could say I was a teenager who used to sit in prayer. I'm not. I recommend sitting in prayer now. But as a teenager, I was not that person. Yeah. I was the kid who dove nose first into a book.
Yeah. And has being a mom kind of given you a new insight into your mom as well? Or
yes. Helped yes that and no. Whole process? Yes and no.
Okay.
Yes, in the sense being a mom has changed a lot about who I am. Mm-hmm. But as I was writing my testimony and writing it and like kind of thinking back on my life, I had a moment where I just sat there and I go, I would do anything for Oliver. I would defend Oliver to my last final breath. There's nothing that could come between me and my child. Mm-hmm. And I sit there and I look and I go, how could you choose a substance over your child? Mm-hmm. So as a child of an addict, I can forgive. As a parent, I'm struggling really hard with the forgiveness. Mm-hmm. Because you made that child. You've watched that child grow. But you're going to choose a substance that's essentially ruining your life over that child. So I'm working very hard on that stage of forgiveness.
And have you talked about that with your mom?
Yes and no. She struggles with even acknowledging all that happened. Because.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
It's like she doesn't remember a lot of it. Mm-hmm. So when I'm talking about what happened at this house and when I was this age, and she looks at me, she's like, none of that happened. And I go, yeah, Mom, it did.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to remind you, but yeah, it did.
And do you have any further, have you looked into, you know, the psychology of what happens to the brain on drugs to help you kind of understand these choices?
No, yeah. Actually, I understand that it's a sickness and I can respect that and I can try to help with that. Mm-hmm. But the more I found that I looked into it, the angrier I became.
Oh, really?
So it was more along the lines of having to sit in prayer with God and just being like, okay, help me let go. Mm-hmm. And where I find God the most is in music. So I will put headphones on and I'll just go sit and listen. Just listen, and sometimes the music will end at a good spot. I'll just sit there in prayer for 5 to 10 minutes.
Yeah, I've been known to do that too. In the car, on my walks, at home. It's music for sure. Mm-hmm. That's really good. Could you wrap us up with the verse that you brought in today?
Oh, absolutely.
I love the verse that you chose, by the way.
I love the verse too. It's Joshua 1:9. Have I not commanded you to be strong and courageous? Do not be afraid, do not be discouraged, for the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. I love that verse because it truly reminds me, no matter how upset, angry, or hurt I am, I'm never alone. Even when my husband's out of town and it's been a really rough day with Oliver or any other child I'm watching that day, it reminds me that I'm never truly alone. I can sit down and listen to a good song and just sometimes just cry it out and just know that I'm not alone because he's with me.
And he makes us courageous.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Taylor.
Well, thank you for having me.
I really loved talking finally and getting to know you more too, because I see the face and you're with my daughter all the time for
youth. Oh, I love your daughter. She's fantastic.
Thanks for saying. I love her too.
She didn't have to pay me or anything.
Yeah. Oh, thanks so much.
Thank you.
This will be live in a couple months.
Perfect.
Okay. Thanks.